Today, I've got a very beautiful recovery story for you. This one is from Hugo, and he was extremely severe. And at that time, I didn't really know if I could help him because he was that severe. But right now, he's living a beautiful life in a van as a surfer. It's making even me jealous. So let's dive together in this recovery story. My name is Daniel. I'm a recovery coach. I work with the release process. It's a method that we developed along the way that we have great results with. And yeah, enjoy this story of Hugo. Okay. Hello, Hugo.
Hey, Daniel.
it's so lovely to see you.
It is very good to see you again. Yeah, after 3 years.
Yes, it's been a while. It's for you, it must be a completely different world when you think
it
about
really
how
is.
Because you were stuck in that room, right? Like you were in bed every day.
Yeah, this is not quite a room, but I mean, yeah, just next door. And the last time, maybe it wasn't quite first 3 years ago. I mean, it was 3 years ago we first connected, and then maybe I haven't seen you for a good 2 years, 18 months, something like that. And last time I was sitting in this chair, a very different story. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I've been following you on Instagram. And I must say, like, I'm getting a little bit jealous of your life. Beautiful surfing pictures, videos, landscapes, your van that you're living in. It's like you're living your life right now.
It really is. It really does feel like I'm living the dream that I kind of set up for myself and dreamt about for a long time. But it's just truly incredible that it's here. And I need to keep reminding myself because on the surface, like I'm trying to make the Instagram as authentic as possible and not only the beautiful sides of things. But yeah, even though I am living the stream life, like under the surface, it still feels like I'm doing work. But I think everyone's doing that. You know, everyone's dealing with stuff all the time. And so, yeah, I'm trying to allow myself to relax and see that I am living the dream I wanted. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. Could you take us back a few years when everything started going downhill?
Yeah. So for me, I think it was about 2019. I had the first big crash. But I think like a lot of people, I was living in chronic stress for many years before that, probably since childhood, just when I may have developed beliefs around not being good enough, and then hence started the people pleasing and all of those dysfunctional coping mechanisms. And I also had tick fever when I was about 10 years old, really badly, which I'm not necessarily sure was a direct correlation, but I think it's actually another stressor on the body, which is said to kind of sort of linger in your system for a while. And so after that, in my teenage years, I did go to the doctors a couple of times and had some blood tests for sort of general fatigue, but I was still living a pretty, pretty much normal life, very sporty, very active. When I finished school, I went traveling, doing lots of partying and surfing and, really living a full on life. And then it was when I started uni and then soon realized it wasn't for me and dropped out, that was a major stressor for me. And suddenly my life had no direction. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I felt like I was being left behind by all my friends. And so I think that was the kind of final straw that tipped me over the edge. I was actually traveling again. This was another potential coping mechanism. I'd always just go traveling when things aren't going well. I thought that would sort me out. I was in South America when, my health just started to not go right. And then COVID hit, so I had to come home. And it was in that kind of early stages. I got a diagnosis quite early after all the classic blood tests, not finding anything wrong. And the doctor suggested it might be CFS. And so I just completely rejected that label at first, reading the horror stories online, just didn't want to identify. So then I decided to try again to escape to a nice warm climate and went out to Kenya. And I thought a couple months of sun and sea and I'll be back to normal, able to start a new degree that I'd found and I'd be fine. But of course that's not what happened. And I was still, even though I was thought I was relaxing, it absolutely wasn't. I was like trading cryptocurrency, really high stress, like pushing myself. I was still, experiencing symptoms, and I found that drinking helped with that. So I was drinking a lot. I was super stressed out and just not understanding why my health was continuing to decline. And it eventually got to the point where I wasn't able to look after myself. So my mum had to come out, look after me, and eventually take me home in a wheelchair back to the UK. So that was my worst nightmare. And then entered that period of just confusion and fear and that spiral of getting worse and worse. And so it was probably somewhere in the depths of that I came across your interview with Raylan that you did, and instantly really resonated with that, and probably was one of the turning points for sure for me.
Yeah, and when I think that we had like a few coachings 3 years ago, it's hard to remember, but you couldn't really make it through. And at that time, I didn't have the skills yet to make sure that people could have an entire session. And you were like in a dark room, right? The entire time.
Pretty much. I was more or less fully bed bound and pretty light sensitive. So curtains shut and things. And the idea of like an hour long phone call was way, and I was trying like messaging you, like, can we do maybe half an hour? And that seemed like way too much. And so it's, come a long way. Come a long way since then.
And what kind of symptoms did you have?
All the classics, just, headaches, body aches, feeling tired and wired, like not able to sleep properly, or just very shallow sleep, never feeling restored. Just feeling completely drained and just, something feeling very wrong. It was, stuff like that for a long way before I started to find anything helpful. But I went down all the classic routes of, supplement, changing diet, doing all of the external things I could try, before eventually sort of realizing that it had to be an inward journey, and really resonating with what you were talking about with, the deep emotional healing that is the underlying problem needs to be fixed, and you can try as many things on the outside as you want, but eventually that's always just another coping strategy of not wanting to go inwards.
And what a journey you've made. I remember once receiving an email from your father, because he was very worried, and maybe as well he didn't understand what was going on, and he was like, what's happening, is this like a this doesn't happen in poor countries. I remember that he said something like that to me. Is this like a rich country thing? How did that go with your parents and after the email?
Well, I never even knew he sent me that. It was when we had another coaching call, you told me, and I was like, I remember thinking to myself, like, do I even want to know what was in that email? Because I know it's going to be very triggering. But I think, fair enough. I had no idea about the condition until I had to face it. And I think unless you're going through it, you're never going to understand what it's like. And so being part of me at the beginning thought I could just push my way through it. And I think maybe he was coming from that mindset of, I just need to, suck it up and get on, find something to do. But I think you were very helpful in whatever you replied to him, saying, this is very, very real, and pushing is not going to help. And I think I've since come to realize, I've heard that, these conditions, these chronic stress conditions, are very prevalent in, developing countries as well, but they're just much, there's no exposure, and people, really struggle, I can imagine. So, I'm very, very privileged to, have been able to move back in with my parents, and they've been an incredible support to me this whole time. So I do feel very lucky. I do feel very lucky in that regard.
And what were all the, I imagine that you weren't like immediately drawn to emotional work. So what were all the things that you tried, and what was your result with that?
I was just, trying everything and anything I could try, like all the alternatives, like acupuncture and things like that. And I did Cambo, actually, which I'd be interested to talk to you about, because I think you did that as well. At the time, I was doing it just purely from a point of, anything might help. And it was probably not the best time, so it was an incredibly intense experience, as you know. And from those that don't, it's like a frog venom that they, from the Amazon jungle or something, and they burn your skin and then like smear a bit of this venom on you, and like for about 20 minutes you feel like you've been well and truly poisoned, and you're throwing up, and like it's really intense. But it's meant to be incredible at purging toxins from the body and everything. And I'm sure, I think I'd be interested to go back to it now, from more of a place of understanding. And I think it can be a helpful tool in the right setting. But just when I was just desperate, you know, I was going for anything. And then after that, I even tried smoking DMT, which is like the active ingredient in ayahuasca. And just because I'd heard some people online, miracle recovery stories, and smoke this thing one time, you're healed. Obviously not the case. And that was a pretty intense experience as well. So you can see like how desperate I was.
What happened when you smoked DMT?
Well, I made the mistake of having my mom trips at me, like next to me on the bed. And she was way more terrified than me. So that was already a bad start. And it was just like, just overwhelming, just felt like, and then like my consciousness was expanded to the size of the universe. And it was, I didn't really gain much insight. It was just very, very intense. Yeah. So that was, that was how desperate I was. Yeah.
I also did the combo thing, but that was in my end of my journey, not in the where you were. So I was already able to drive the car and do groceries and cook. And well, you don't really need to cook when you do combo because you vomit everything. But I liked the experience, but in hindsight, it didn't give me that much.
Really?
Okay. Because in the beginning, we were all thinking like toxins were the reason that you got it, because I got it after a viral infection. But as it turned out, it didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, interesting.
And after that, you do feel great, right?
I was surprised. I thought I'd be having a massive crash after that, but I did feel quite a level of sort of clarity and stuff. So, I think it can, because we all, accumulate toxins in our body. So I'm sure. In fact, I need to thank you for allowing me to push this interview to today, because I went to this festival over the weekend, which is why we had to reschedule yesterday. And I'm sure I could do with purging some toxins after that festival, but it's, amazing to be back at a point where I can, party a little bit and have fun with my friends. And so, it's really amazing.
Cool. And could you tell me a little bit about how your journey became more empowered, that you sort of knew what to do and how to go forward and move with the ups and downs?
Yeah. I think it was really listening to your recovery interview with Raylan that really, it just really sounded, it was just so resonant with me that it was like, you need to take this on yourself to do the inner work yourself. And everything I'd come up to on that point, like I'd come across brain retraining before quite early on, and it just hadn't been explained to me well, and it just seemed like this superficial quick fix, like you think positively and you're going to be fine. So I kind of, didn't think about it, didn't really go down that path much at all at the beginning. And then, so when I heard about you talking about, really facing your traumas and your emotional wounds, like something resonated with me, thinking like, that sounds tough, but it sounds like that's where the true healing is going to happen. And I also, at a similar time, I remember in your interview talking about, meditation and presence and being able to, calm the mind and things like that. And I'd recently just read the book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, and that was one of, the really profound resources that really helped me. And so it was a combination of realizing that I think presence is such a fundamental building block. Before you start doing any brain retraining or anything, you need to be able to watch your mind and step out of it and not be just constantly in this turmoil of spiraling. So that was another key sort of turning point for me, was learning to be able to step back a little bit from my mind. And that's a tool you have to develop. Obviously, it's quite hard to just snap out of your mind. So lots of meditation practice. And then from there, you start to notice things coming up when you are present. You start to become in touch with your emotions that are, in your body. And I think, you talk about it a lot, how we become so detached from our emotions when we become walking head. We're just, not in touch with our body. We can't feel anything. We're just these thinking minds that are, blindly going through life. So I think it was, a combination of, the presence and then really understanding the implications of the emotional healing. And at first, actually, it was quite, it's intense. I think when you start, this is why people just avoid this, it's their last port of call, or everything else before they start going inwards, because it's uncomfortable and it's so undefined, and there's no black and white. It's not like this is how you do it. It's kind of like it's going to be different for everyone. And I think that's where your course is so incredible, because it really does help you through it. And you are upfront about the fact that sometimes it can make you feel worse when you start delving into this stuff, because there's such a backlog of small traumas and emotional wounds and everything that starts to come to the surface, and it can be really frightening at first if you're not really understanding it. But as I kind of basically chipped away at that for a while, and it wasn't a quick process, you know, it was really took, you know, months and years to kind of just slowly process all of that backlog and of emotions. And then so all that time I was getting glimpses of how sometimes after a release, emotional release, I would feel a lot better, which is counterintuitive, because you feel like it's a really stressful event and you think, oh no, this is going to really, you know, send me over the edge. And then surprisingly you feel better. So if I was, you know, I could see the way all that time, like I had these glimpses of hope. And I think the more I processed of all that old trauma, the more regulated my emotions became. It was much more of like, you know, small little spikes of like emotion, release the emotion, then you're fine again. Whereas in the past, it's kind of all tangled together. You start releasing some emotion, other emotion comes up, and it feels very tricky to navigate at first. But definitely it's become a lot more sort of, yeah, regulated, I think. But yeah, I think that's, so it was, yeah, really the emotional work that really was the first thing that started to move things for me.
Yeah, that's sort of the stroll that we have to give people, you know, like after a release, you feel better, and it is true, but it's not permanent. So next layer will come.
Yeah.
And even sometimes I still have symptoms, you know, like for everyone out there, it's not like this magic thing. I'm sure have some symptoms as well, because you went on a trip and you came back home and you was like, oh my God, it's pretty challenging, right?
Yeah, definitely.
What happened?
So I just got back from traveling. I drove my camper van all the way down through Spain, Portugal, down to Morocco. It was an incredible, incredible trip. And then I met a girl who in Morocco who we drove back up to the UK with. And that was, you know, pretty intense, like living in a van together, but, you know, managing it well, and it was an incredible experience. And then getting home, I think partly maybe coming back to the same environment where I was sick was always going to be a bit triggering. But then also the family dynamics of like being around my parents again and living with them again. And I think it's very easy to step back into the child like role, like I'm a child, they're my parents. You know, it's after being so independent, you know, it can be just a weird dynamic. So then I think that definitely brought the more stuff up, and I've been a bit rough for a while, but it is so empowering to know that these physical, very, very physical symptoms can be shifted, you know, with emotional work. And it just means I've managed to break that fear cycle, which we all get stuck in, of emotion and then fear and then more emotion. I mean, symptoms and fear and more symptoms. And being able to just like hold space for myself when I'm feeling rough and do the work that I know works, and then get out of it is probably empowering. Yeah.
Hey, and right now you make surfboards, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of the plan. It was actually at the beginning of this whole health thing when I was still pretty mild, and I wasn't really able to work full time, but I could do some stuff, and I had good days and bad days. And it was also COVID. So a lockdown project I started was just building a couple of wooden surfboards just as a hobby, and then just really, really enjoyed it and thought maybe there's something here I can turn into something. And so now that's what I'm still in the initial stages of launching this business, but that's the plan, is to turn this kind of surfer van life career lifestyle into some sort of career. Be making boards and then going to cool places, taking photos of them, promoting them, and coming back, making a few more. And that's the dream. So we'll see if I can really turn that into something.
Yeah, I don't know if people who are watching this interview are ready to go surfing.
Maybe not. But
we put a link. We put a link anyhow, and maybe in 1 or 2 years things are completely different.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I remember thinking, like, surfing, it was always a passion of mine before this as well. I remember thinking, like, in the worst, you know, in the depths of it, like, God, it feels so unlikely that I'll ever get back there, you know, because it's just so, such a physically demanding sport, you know, when you're just getting like battered by waves and you're out of breath and you're underwater and it's like so intense. So it is incredible to be back here and being able to enjoy it again.
And about studying, because before you were thinking about starting another study, and then
So I did have to drop out of that one as well when I first, you know, I started it, wasn't able to carry on. So that was the second time that I dropped out, which was again a massive blow. But now I think, you know, I really don't think university's for me and going down the classic route of getting a degree, getting a job. I think I always want to hopefully work for myself, have the flexibility to do what I want to do. And I think it's so ingrained in us that we need to get like training in order to do something. But I think you really can teach yourself so much, you know, from everything pretty much from online these days. And like I built my van just completely from YouTube, no experience. And now I'm thinking about maybe doing that as well as Circle, you know, building vans, selling them on. So I think that kind of practical work is what I feel drawn to. And it's kind of nice to know, like it's still a part of me feels like I want to go back to university to have the same experience that my friends have had and everything. But I know that that is going to come at a cost of doing something I really don't want to. Even if I enjoy most of the course, there's still going to be exams and modules I hate and, you know, stress and like all of that just so I can say I've got a degree, I think. And yeah, my direction of life, I'm not going to need that. So I'm happy to let that go.
When you do that, then you have no knowledge about making surfboards, and then you need someone like you, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that seems to work well for me at this stage.
That's amazing. Hey, and another question, because you are pretty young. So you were like, I think early 20s
I was about 1920, when it first started.
So how was it to have that experience at that age?
Yeah, it was. In hindsight, I'm very grateful actually that it happened at that period of time, you know, because I'd finished school, I'd had the taste of freedom of going traveling and everything, and that was amazing. And then obviously, it was incredibly intense to then be completely incapacitated back at home and going through all of this. But it really forced me to confront life, you know, the big questions of life and what is this? What do I want to do? All of that. So now I feel very, you know, grateful to be in a point where I kind of know what I want to do for the rest of my life. Whereas I think a lot of people, they don't think about that at all. And then they have midlife crisis at some point and they have to figure that out at a later date. So from that respect, it was very, I'm grateful now, but obviously at the time it was really brutal and a lot of shame to do with being so weak and incapacitated, you know, as a guy meant to be in my prime, I was less physically capable than my 90-year-old granddad and stuff. So it was pretty brutal. And a lot of people, I think that's potentially why I resonated with your story as well. It's because you were, you know, another young guy, the young going through it. And it seems to be less common that. And so that was really inspiring to see someone, you know, walking a similar path.
Well, I'm already middle-aged right now, so, you know, I'm no longer a young guy.
Well, you're still looking good.
Thank you. Yeah. I think like not working for 10 years and laying in bed kept me young.
Yeah, definitely the best skincare routine, just staying in bed.
it seems like I got my years back because I wasn't doing anything. So
interesting.
I'm 40 is the new 30. For me, it really feels like that. Like I just started with my 30s. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Hey, and about friends, I know that from Instagram, I see sometimes someone commenting like a good friend of yours who was supporting you, but did you have that support from friends when you were ill?
Lots of my friends like really wanted to be able to support me, and they still, of course, didn't really understand what was going on, but I like had such this limited capacity to seeing friends. You know, I found it so intense, and like I'd sometimes arrange for a friend to come over for 15 minutes just be me. And like in that 15 minutes, I'd be trying so hard to be like on good form and like myself. And so they would leave with a weird kind of perception of like, oh, he seems okay, but like, you know, see him for 15 minutes. And like it was a weird dynamic. But I definitely had some really good friends who did really stick by me and and really try, you know, understood and did. They were always there for me if I needed them, which was incredible. But then also through like, I think this is one of the real benefits of social media with this sort of condition, is you can connect with other people in similar situations. So ended up making new friends online, you know, and they were always, you know, obviously then really did understand that. That was nice. So I have felt pretty lucky that I've always had a pretty good support network of people, which has been, I'm very grateful for.
Amazing. Then is there anything else that you think that people with a chronic illness, fatigue, or long COVID, or, you know, all those types of labels, all those type of labels that they need to know? Something that you can
help them? Let me have a thing. I've got some notes in the back. I've been trying to, I was being a bit nervous this morning going onto this interview. So I was like, oh, I better make some notes and get ready. I think breath work for me was also another, a big shift in my recovery, because it was sort of the first thing that allowed me to actually move out of the fight or flight state that I really noticed. And so then once you start building up the trust in yourself that you can come out of fight or flight, things just start to move a little bit easier. And I think the biggest thing that I wish I'd known at the beginning was that it's not necessarily energy that is the problem, it's stress. And I think we're so ingrained by the medical system saying, you know, you need to pace, you need to really, you know, conserve your energy. And, you know, I think ultimately it's, you need to be paced. I think you've said this, is you don't pace your energy, you pace your stress. And once you realize that it's, yeah, stress, not energy, then that is a very liberating thing, because I found with breath work at first when I started it was quite intense, and like obviously any intensity I would shy away from thinking, you know, this is just causing more of an issue. But I think when you're in that real fight or flight state, it's almost, you need that intense energy needs to be shifted. And that's where like exercise can really help. But it's been a real difficulty in like untangling that from my mind, seeing exercise as safe, you know, because being conditioned. And I think when we first get sick, our bodies are so depleted and we're just so, you know, weak, and exercise is going to, you know, be too much of a stress on the body. And so that's when we get into the push crash cycle at first, and we think, oh yeah, I see, you know, exercise really is a problem, because I can see when I do this, I get really sick. But then that can spiral into just like the smallest bits of exercise, like walking up the stairs being seen as really dangerous. And then it's the fear of the activity that's causing the setback and not the activity itself. And so that's a really difficult one to untangle. But I think breath work helped me in that, because it's something you can ease into really easily. And when you start seeing results, like then you can, yeah, that trust just builds. So that was another turning point.
I have to give one disclaimer for people who think like, let's do breath work.
Yes.
Without any preparation, that's like, no, not really a good idea. Because then you might amplify your symptoms and become more stressed about your symptoms.
Yeah, definitely is something you need to build up to very gradually. And the same with any exercise, you need to build yourself up. And but it is very, so empowering now to be able to go like surfing or go for a run or something when I'm feeling stressed and feel it dissipate like that. So that is incredible to have got back to that point. And again, just building up your tool set of what helps you process your emotions and regulate yourself again, because at first we just have no control and we're just like revving really highly the whole time and it's just impossible. But now I constantly throughout the day, like just see it, visualize in my mind, like my mental activation, like a wave. It's like certain things bring you up. But then when you have the tools to bring yourself down, it doesn't matter anymore, because I think in the past there's so much fear around stress, because we know that that's what causes issues. So then you're like, there's the fear, and then there's the fear of fear, and then you're just spiraling and going up and up and up. So when you build up your tool set, then you can bring yourself down, and then it's like something's going to trigger you, and then you come down a bit and it's choosy, and you come down, and like that just removes all the fear of going up and up and up, because it just doesn't matter. You know, you can go up and you can come down, you can really emotion and these symptoms, and it's just building that resiliency. That's just very, very empowering.
Great. Was there anything else on your list?
Let's see. a very organized list. So, no, I think pretty much we've covered most of this stuff. I think one of the questions on your list was like, what have I gained from this? What's it taught me? And one of the things I've learned is that it's okay to be a sensitive person. Like, I realize that I am quite a sensitive person. But I see the benefits of that. You know, I see that it helps me be creative and everything. But also allowing myself just space, you know, when I need it, and not constantly pushing, and just really being in touch with my body and what works for me, and allowing myself to, yeah, just being gentle with myself and allowing myself to be when I need it. And also, actually, yeah, another quite a big component, which would be interesting to touch on, is spirituality and how that sort of fed into my own recovery. And I think for me, spirituality is simply just like learning to navigate life in a way that sort of suits you, and a really kind of, you know, having to face the big questions of life, and really think about them, because I think most of us don't, you know, we stumble through life, and then suddenly when something really intense happens that we start really thinking like, okay, what is going on here? And so for me, it was a lot of kind of existential turmoil of what's going on, what is life, what is consciousness, all of this. And I think it doesn't really matter how you arrive, wherever you do, but once you do arrive at a spot of kind of understanding that life itself is incredibly beautiful, and like being grateful for life, like then suddenly we're not living from this kind of fundamental unstable place of fear, because when you haven't really thought about everything deeply, there's always a part of you that's just like, this is all kind of overwhelming and terrifying, and like, let's just not go there and we'll carry on. Once you've like really kind of come to terms with things a bit, and then you see like you're it's kind of that classic to be or not to be. When you realize you truly want to be, like you see that life is, existence is incredible, then you're coming from this place of safety, you know, ultimate safety of like, whatever happens, like, fair enough, like I understand that life is beautiful. And so I think that was a big one for me.
You're touching really big, really great big topics right now.
I know, possibly the biggest topics in fact.
Yeah. What I've noticed is that most people, they seek spirituality out of a lack, because they basically feel so disconnected, and from that disconnection you're stuck in your mind, and then spirituality becomes about theories and believing theories and spreading theories. I mean, that's basically what humans have been doing for the past maybe thousands of years. And I think that spirituality should always be practical and in the moment and physical, without thinking too much about it, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and that's again what Eckhart Tolle talks about in presence, when you're fully, truly present and you're not thinking, you know, it's just, you know, life's good, basically. Like, it seems like a massive oversimplification, but like, it's when we start putting narratives and stories that things get tricky. And then obviously all the different spiritual literatures and stuff out there, there are very practical things you can implement, like how I think in Buddhism and things, they talk about how no one event can be labeled as good or bad, you know, because everything leads on to something else, and you know, a good thing might lead to something else negative or bad happening, but like, it's only our labels of things that cause, you know, and so that doesn't require you to believe anything. It's just like something like, oh, you can remember that time you missed the bus and then you met a really cool person and like, you know, things happen. So when you start disentangling things and you realize you really can't say this is bad, you know, because who knows, like the healing work you're doing now, maybe it's going to be affecting generations to come, your grandchildren and things. So trying to, yeah, separate yourself from labels is a big one.
I like that. Wow, we ended really deep. To say something about it, I read the book from Eckhart Tolle in 2007, so that's 18 years ago. I didn't have a clue what I was reading, to be very honest.
Oh, really?
And I thought, like, let's talk about it, because I'm a cool guy, I'm spiritual. Let's talk about this book that I don't have a clue about what it means. And then it was 10 years later then, maybe, when my thoughts just dropped out of nothing, like after all that suffering, just like Eckhart, actually.
Yeah.
And then just like Eckhart, I was going to sit on park benches the entire day. I was just in the moment and it was absolutely lovely. And then I remembered that book 10 years later and I was like, oh yeah, that's
Now
what
I
he
know what
meant.
he's talking about.
Now I understand, yeah.
Yeah.
Before I was just a guy who was like pretending to be spiritual and now I finally get the simplicity of it.
I think that was a comfort for me as well. Like when I was, just realizing that this, you know, intense suffering can kind of bring you full circle to finding that kind of spirit, you know, that kind of truth and being at peace in the moment. And that was a comfort to me. And like when I was just spiraling and getting worse and worse and worse and not knowing how bad it was going to get and reading the absolute horror stories online, like of yours being an example of not being able to open your eyes, it was so, you know, the worst case scenario of CFA. And kind of feeling like it was inevitably going to get there because I was just spiraling. I had no way of stopping it. But it is incredible how suffering can be this kind of like self-correcting mechanism. Like you get to such a point where you suddenly gain some sort of realizations and stuff. So that's also something that is, a comfort to me.
Yeah, beautifully said. Well, let's keep it with that. Thank you so much, Hugo. I'm going to
add in
some of your pictures because they absolutely are looking amazing.
For sure.
Thank you so much for the interview. It was a pleasure to see you again after so many time.
It really has been a pleasure. And it's just really shown me how much things have changed since the last time I was sat here talking to you.
Yeah. And for me, you're someone completely different. You look muscled. You look healthy. You look really good right now.
Oh, it's the Moroccan tan. The Moroccan tan.
Yeah. I've still got that picture of you in my mind, like this in bed in the dark.
It's a dark time for sure.
Thank you so much for having this interview with me, Hugo. And
you're very welcome. Thank you for all of your help over the last few years. You know, you've been an incredible resource for me and such a support.
Thank you. All right,
okay,
bye Hugo, bye everyone.
Bye.